woman asked her daughter if she had seen her newspaper. And the daughter said, come on, Mom, newspapers are so old-fashioned. You need to use my tablet. She said, okay, and the poor fly didn't stand a chance. For our movie this week, it's Jurassic World. And instead of talking about cloning and human cloning, we're going to talk about something else in the film, talking about vengeance. There was an article by Kenneth Moorfield on ChristianityToday.com, and his article was titled Dinosaurs 1, Humans 0. And some of the things that he talked about really fit in with what we're going to be talking about today. So in any movie that you see, there has to be a bad guy, right? There has to be some sort of problem or some sort of dilemma that has to take place. Otherwise, it's a pretty boring movie. In this movie, there's a lot of different things that come up. But one of the main ones is a hunter by the name of Ken Wheatley. He does some very despicable things throughout this movie. One point, he shoots a man with tranquilizers and leaves him on an island that is blowing up from a volcano. One person he threatens to kill if she doesn't help him keep an animal alive. And one of the things that he does is he's part of this plan that's going to really endanger all of humanity with these dinosaurs. And he does it all for the money. He keeps talking about his big bonus that he's going to get for catching a certain dinosaur. Another disturbing part of Wheatley's character is that he's making himself a necklace made of dinosaur teeth. And so when he tranquilizes the dinosaurs, he goes in with a pair of pliers and rips their teeth out, one tooth at a time, so that he can make this necklace for himself. And he says things like, well, that's going to hurt when you wake up, things like that. And so why do you think the character is set up this way so despicably? Why would the filmmaker set him up so terribly for us? Got to have a villain, yeah? You don't feel bad for him when he dies. Right, the filmmakers want you to hate him. They want you to wish the worst for him. And you want somehow revenge on this guy for all that he's done to these helpless dinosaurs, right? So, of course, at the end, he's tranquilized this dangerous dinosaur, and he goes in with his pliers, and he goes to take the tooth out, and instead of the tooth coming out, the eyes pop open, and they grab him by his arm, and he's hanging by his arm. He bites through, so he's bit his arm off. He's towering, cowering in the corner, scared. And then the dinosaur, whomp, eats the guy. Oh, sorry, spoiler alert. You can see it coming a mile away. Okay, so maybe that happens. So when that happens, we kind of feel satisfied, maybe even a little joyful. One person that I talked to said that they went and the theater actually applauded when that happened. Later in the movie, we see another scene where a person has to choose between the fate of the dinosaurs and the fate of humankind. And they choose to save the dinosaurs because they don't want to kill the animals. And so we see again, human life doesn't have much value compared to the animals in this movie. The animals reign supreme. And not just in the fact that they can eat you, but because they have more value than the human life. We're set to care about the animals, but we're set up to hate Wheatley and the people that are working against the animals. And so, even though he's been treating the dinosaurs horribly, the dinosaurs kind of get the last laugh, and we're like, that's okay. Kind of deserves it. Maybe someone would say karma. But this trend of killing the bad guy is not just in action movies. And that's what's a little disturbing in my research. I found that not only in these action movies are we finding that we're killing the bad guy. Here's a quote from one of the articles. It says, "Don't let the bright colors, talking rabbits, and catchy songs fool you. Children's animated movies can be just as horrific as any R-rated film for adults," a new study says. "Children's cartoon characters face rampant horrors and live in hotbeds of murder and mayhem," according to Dr. Ian Coleman and James Kirkbride. They published a study in the British Medical Journal, And they examined the 45 highest grossing animated films since 1937 and compared them to the top grossing dramas over the same period to see which one portrayed more violence. They said the results paint a gruesome picture of some of the most beloved animated films in history. They found that cartoon characters die 2.5 times as often as characters in adult dramas, and they're frequently killed in brutal, dramatic fashion. Animated characters are also 3 times more likely to be murdered than in characters for films for adults. Villains often die by falling, while friends and family of members of the main character will regularly die during the beginning of the movie, often in an animal attack. In fact, parents die 5 times more often in children's films than in adult dramas. Disney's a prime example of this. Much of its violence is off-screen, but the raw details are still pretty horrific. Bambi's mom gets shot by a hunter. Okay, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen some of these, I'll throw that out there. Nemo's mother becomes fish bait for a barracuda just 4 minutes into Finding Nemo. Tarzan's parents get mauled by a leper 4 minutes into that film. Simba's father, Mufasa, is thrown from a cliff and trampled by stampeding wildebeests in The Lion King. But Scar is eventually punished for that. Scar's the one who caused that. He's eventually punished for killing Mufasa with a gruesome death of his own because he falls down into a pit and is eaten by hyenas. Some of the villains suffer pretty nasty deaths in Disney too. The villainous syndrome in The Incredibles gets shredded by a jet engine. The Little Mermaid, Ursula, gets a ship rammed through her stomach and then gets electrocuted on top of it. In Snow White, back in 1937, the evil queen is struck by lightning, knocked off a cliff, crushed by a boulder, and then devoured by vultures. What are we saying to our kids who are watching these movies, saying that the only way to deal with a really bad enemy is for them to die? And why, when these people die, are we rejoicing in their death? I was talking to someone about this topic earlier this week, and she said, well, it's really the dinosaur in Jurassic Park. It's, you know, the dinosaur did it, so it's really an act of God. And I said, well, true, it's an act of God, but we shouldn't really be rejoicing in the fact that human life is ending. Most time when people are jerks to you, what do? When you get a jerk to you. Be a jerk back. Well, that's not the Sunday school answer I was expecting. Okay, a lot of times we'll let it slide, right? We'll just ignore it. And some of you are shaking your head like, nope. All right. Taking notes now? No. Okay. But other times, you get fed up, and you do something, and you do something back. But most of the time, it's not usually our best moments when we're retaliating like that. But when, in real life and in movies, when someone who's been a jerk to us has something bad happen to them, we have the tendency to take a little bit of joy sometimes, don't we? Just a little bit. But what does the Bible say about things like that? The Bible says that vengeance belongs to who? The Lord. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And what does Jesus tell us to do? He tells us to turn the other cheek. But in these movies, over and over again, we see the audience willing to condone and even celebrate the death of a human being. Now, in our own lives, we're not usually faced with situations where someone's literally going to die, where we wish literally that they would die. You may say, I wish you were dead, but you don't, most of the time, hopefully, mean that. Okay. And I'll say a little caveat here. If you are regularly wishing people dead, make an appointment to come talk to me, because we might have some anger issues we may need to work through. Okay. But in our daily lives, we still don't typically take Jesus' advice and turning the other cheek, do we? We live in a don't get mad, get even world. This mantra is demonstrated in my household with water fights. Lori has warned the children to not start an indoor water fight with me. Because early in our marriage, Lori thought it would be fun to throw a cup of water at me. Well, long story short, she ended up in the shower fully clothed. My kids have suffered similar fates by throwing water on me. Now, if I was to handle that like Jesus, maybe I'd hand them another cup. Or maybe I'd have a proportional response. But that's a silly scenario, but let's think of a more serious scenario. If someone seriously injures a family member or a friend, then it really gets to you, right? It gets under your skin. You want something to happen back to that person. In my marriage counseling, I often see couples who get angry with each other, and they get so angry at the initial hurt that the only thing they can think about is hurting the other person back. They want to hurt the other person as bad as they hurt them. And you can really see this in divorce cases, right? The mom does something, the dad does something, and the mom does something, and back and forth, back and forth. How can I hurt the other person? It's like the child who gets caught in a lie and they get punished. Sometimes they'll say things like, why can't you be more like the other parent? Or why can't you be more like grandma? Or you don't even care about me. Or you wish I wasn't even born. Or you don't love me. Or I don't love you. And you know that sometimes is coming with kids, but it still kind of hurts, doesn't it? When the kid turns and says that to you. But what are they trying to do? They're trying to hurt you because they're being hurt. And sometimes our response when we get hurt is to hurt back. When really, when we're in a relationship with someone and we get hurt, our initial response should not be to hurt the other person back to get even, to get vengeance. It should be get to the root of the issue and save the relationship. Because you have to ask yourself, is this disagreement more important than the relationship I have with this person? Because every single disagreement that you have, no matter how small it is, has the ability to escalate to the point that relationship is either permanently damaged or permanently severed. You ask families who don't speak to each other what the initial offense was, and most of the time, you're going to hear something and you're going to be like, and you're not talking to them for that? My family has a relative that's kind of outcast, and it had to do with something that when my grandpa died, somebody wanted something and someone else took it. And so because of that, they don't speak to anyone else in the family anymore. So is that one object really worth breaking apart the family? You have to decide, is it more important to be right, or is it more important to save this relationship? And sometimes you have to be the bigger person. And you can't be the bigger person by saying, you just hurt me and I really want to hurt you back, but since I'm the bigger person, I'm going to do that. That doesn't work either. Okay? But we have to realize that when we get into fights with people, going for the jugular, we know how to get on each other's nerves, right? You know how to set your spouse or your friend off. You know the words to say. You know the things to do. You know the buttons to push. And with that knowledge comes a great responsibility. And you have a responsibility to never push those buttons. There's a show, King of Queens. And it's on every night, and I watch it as I go to sleep. But those two fight in the most damaging way possible. If you've never seen the show, sometimes it's funny, but when they fight, they always go to name-calling. They always go to name-calling and pointing out faults and bringing things up from other fights and bringing them into the fight. That's not fighting fair. And that can damage your relationship faster than anything. When we're in a disagreement with someone, we cannot resort to name calling. We cannot resort to to pushing buttons and hurting people that we love just because they hurt us. Because that damages the relationship, and you know words can never be taken back. You can apologize till you're blue in the face, but those words that they say are always going to be there. And they're always going to come up in the back of their mind when things go wrong. Like, is this really true? Does he really think I'm this? Does she really think I'm this? God created us just a little lower than the angels. And so because we are made in God's image, and because we are God's children, we deserve respect, we deserve life, but we also owe it to others, even when they irritate us, to give them that respect and to give them that honor they deserve as children of God. The value of human life, no matter what the person has done, must still be highly regarded. And you're not going to see it in the action movies. You're not going to see it in the sitcoms. But Proverbs in the Old Testament, prophets warn against gloating over an enemy's fall or a brother's misfortune. And Jesus tells us to turn the other cheek. And he warns us about returning good for evil. Can you imagine Jesus on the cross? And Jesus is hanging on the cross. And from the cross he said, I wish you guys were up here. Just wait till you guys get up here. Can you imagine? What did Jesus do when he was on the cross? He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Yet when we're wronged, we want to hurt back. We don't want to turn the other cheek. We want to punch them in their cheek. But God says that all life has value. And because we are made in the image of God, we have to put aside that sinful nature, because it's sinful to want to hurt someone. Jesus says if you hate someone, you've committed murder in your heart. So unless you want to join the ranks of the murderers, we need to make sure that we're loving people and that we're not pushing those buttons and that we're not devaluing human life. One of the things I told the kids this week, or last week, or the week before, whenever I was at camp, it's all a blur, was that no matter what you do, good or bad, you cannot change the amount of love God has for you. Do you believe that? No matter what you do, good or bad, you cannot change the amount of love God has for you. Because God loves you infinitely. He loved you so much that he sent his son to die on the cross for you. There's no greater love than to lay down your life for a friend. And Jesus calls us his friend, and he laid down his life for you and for me. And so, no matter what we do, we can't get God to like us better or like us less. And if that's the way that God feels about us, then that's the way we need to feel about other people, even when they hurt us, even when they've wronged us. That song that we sang today, God is my deliverer, right? Is that the song? I just forgot it. Your love defends me. Thank you. And when we're going through these times, when people are attacking us or hurting us, that needs to be our thought. Your love, God, defends us. Your love protects us. Because even though we're hurt, even though people are being mean to us and saying things about us that are not true, we have to let God take care of it. Because we can't retaliate. We can't go and try to hurt them. We can't try to start rumors about them or do that kind of thing. Because God loves them just like he loves me. Just like he loves you. And so we have to let God defend us. Because God will defend us. God will never leave us. God will never forsake us. And so when those arrows come, know that God is with you. And your response does not have to be to hurt someone else. Your response can be, God, this is happening and I need your help. I need you to get me through it. And sometimes that's where we're at. And God will never let you down. If you feel like God's left you, it's probably the other way around. It's probably you've walked away from God. We need to value human life, even of those people that are our, quote, enemies, or enemies of the gospel. We still need to love, we still need to cherish, and we still need to value.
You've been listening to Pastor Kevin Daniels at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button, or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111 Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.